the industry is inventing new and exciting things like sharks with freaking laser beams that you could possibly need to protect your organization.
Sure.
When in reality, all of those things that you've just said, phishing, ransomware, there's 50 to 100, 150 plus different products you could buy, all do exactly the same thing, mm-hmm. you know? So actually spending time selecting which one from other ones is probably not the best use of your time. You use something, right? We just need to go and get those basics done and stop worrying about the sharks with freaking laser beams.
Hey, welcome to another episode of the Coffee Break Podcast, where our mission is to share business ideas, practices, and strategies while we enjoy our cup of coffee. Today's guest is Craig Goodwin, and we are going to be talking with him about cybersecurity. Now, before we get into the conversation, two things. One, he is going to help us with some very practical applications of things that you can do today for free that you probably already have access to that you're not using. So we'll talk about that. But then he's also going to give you some additional free resources of ways that you can really understand maybe potential vulnerabilities inside of your cybersecurity repertoire and then offer you some solutions for that. That's number one. Number two, before we get into the conversation, I do want to remind you and ask for you to subscribe if you haven't already. We are producing one of these podcast episodes for you every week, and we have a new episode that comes out every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. And we want you to not miss a single one of them. And in order to do that, well, the best way to do it is to subscribe. So make sure you subscribe on whatever platform that you're listening right now or watching. If you're on YouTube, if you're on Facebook, make sure you hit follow or hit the subscribe link. If you're on the audio version, make sure you subscribe on that particular platform as well, because we don't want you to miss a single episode. We have plenty more for you to go check out as well by visiting lockdoc.net/podcast. Now, grab a cup of coffee. Let's get ready for this conversation.
We got so much to say, we got a podcast to make, we're sipping on lattes, and it's time for a coffee break. It's time for a coffee break.
All right, Craig, thank you for joining us on the podcast today. Super excited to talk about our topic for today, cybersecurity, and hopefully, unpacking some of the confusion around it. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in a few moments. So, but again, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Chad. Nice to be here.
All right. What we do, we've got a little game that we play here. It's called Rapid Fire. Five randomly selected questions just to get under your skin with unknown point values. And we're going to give those to you and then we'll give you a score at the end. Will that work?
That's good to me.
All right. Question number one, what's the last thing that you gave up on? And are you happy or disappointed that you did that?
Last thing I gave up on was my bike ride just before I went on holiday. I'm happy I did, because I think if I'd carried on, I probably would have been a lot more tired to get on the plane with the kids.
All right. Well, how long was this bike ride?
I think I got about 25 kilometers, but I planned to do about 40.
So. Ah, well. I mean, that's still great effort. We'll give you that.
I'll take it.
Question number two, what's something that you learned from simply watching a stranger?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. Watching a stranger. I learned the other day patience for my son's basketball coach. I was watching him teach a group of 12-year-olds how to do a particular basketball drill that I couldn't understand. The 12-year-old certainly couldn't understand, and how he had the patience to run through it for an entire 60 minutes until they actually got it was just incredible. So I'm not sure whether I learned that or gained that from him, but it was definitely an incredible thing to watch.
It was definitely something to appreciate.
Absolutely.
All right, question number three, what do you feel comfortable get that question correctly. Would you feel comfortable showing me the photos on your phone?
No. I purposely select the ones that I put online because they're consumable by other people. The rest are definitely for me only.
I saw that question. I was like, I think it would be awkward. Yeah, that would be awkward. And it would just be a bunch of food photos. So that would be interesting.
Well, that's what I was going to say. And your mind goes to weird places, but it's not like that. They're just mostly terrible pictures of me.
Terrible. And random photos of trying to find things on the back of your head.
Yeah.
Question number four. What animal do you think best reflects your personality?
Wow. I think probably my dog. I've got an awesome Cocker Spaniel, and they do say that owners turn into their pets and vice versa. And he's just got an incredible lust for life. He's always everywhere, high energy, super excited to see everyone, and a real people dog. So I think maybe more wanting than realistic, but I think my dog would be closest.
All right, last question, number five. What destination is at the top of your list to visit?
So I was going to say Florida, because that's our go-to every year, but that's boring. So I think somewhere I haven't been that I would really like to go is the Galapagos Islands.
Ooh.
So just incredible wildlife, completely off-piste, completely out of it, non-connected. I've got absolutely no chance of convincing my wife to go, so it would be an alone holiday. But that's where I want to go in my bucket list.
All right, I'm glad that we both can agree on the fact that Florida's boring, but also. Also, I've seen so many videos of the Galapagos Islands. I think that would be a really, really cool adventure. That's a good choice.
Incredible. And just to clarify, I didn't mean Florida's boring. I meant it's a boring choice, because everyone makes it.
I took it as Florida was boring, and I'm going to run with it.
Okay. I'll take it.
All right, congratulations. We'll give you a score of 896.
Wow. I have no context for that, but I'll take it.
Yeah, most people don't. All right. So welcome to the podcast again. Thank you very, very much for joining us. And maybe people are catching on to it right now if they're listening or watching, but you're not from Florida. So give us a little bit of context as to where you're from and kind of how you arrived here today.
Yeah, for sure. So super fast. I'm based in the United Kingdom, so I'm on the south coast of the UK. A place called Portsmouth, close to Southampton, about 90 minutes outside of London. For the sheer amount of time I spend in the US, for everyone I've told, I'm just from London. It's just a much easier conversation. And I think, Chad, we started the podcast, or certainly our conversation today, that way when you ask me where I'm from, because it just makes life so much easier. So London's fine.
Yeah.
I spent my life in security of one guise or another. So I started with the intelligence services with the UK government. So running around deserts in the human intelligence side of the house, and then fell into cybersecurity as I left the military intelligence side. And I've been a chief security officer with large technology companies for about 18 years. And then about 2 years ago, I met my now co-founder of Cyvatar at a bar at the RSA conference in San Francisco, where I categorically told him I was too tired. It was a Friday. I don't want to talk about work. He turned up anyway, bought me a beer, and the rest was history. And we've spent 2 years building Cyvatar, which is a cybersecurity as a service business, subscription business based around helping small to medium-sized businesses get secure, really, truly secure their businesses and navigate what is an incredibly complex cybersecurity ecosystem out there.
Yeah, I think that's a really great introduction, because we were talking a little bit before we got started recording. I recently was at an event and there was a topic on cybersecurity. It was on that process, and it was almost so, like, walking away from it was a little bit more daunting than what I was hoping for when I walked in there. And I felt like a lot of the folks in the room kind of had a similar concept, is, okay, this is really good information and it's really, like, applicable, but now I just don't want to open up my email. Like, it's just... It'll be easier to stay clear of it and just not touch anything. So I want to kind of talk a little bit about that side of things from a perspective of making sure that that it's maybe digestible or actionable. What should we be able to do out of it? But the other component is, like, trying to figure out from a perspective of, like, I feel like when you start to talk about cybersecurity from a business perspective, from a business owner's perspective, it feels almost daunting, almost a little just a struggle to actually understand it. And so therefore it kind of falls down on the priority list. It's just, well, I don't really think it's going to be a big concern, and we're probably not going to have any issues. So if we can just maybe just skirt the edges of it, we're going to be fine. It's probably not a good way to think and a good way to operate, but I'm just going off the perspective of a lot of folks that I talk with, you kind of get that feeling. On the flip of that, right, is I know personally two different people, one that got attacked by ransomware where they literally lost their entire hard drive because of someone holding their data for hostage, and then two people that have fallen scammed to phishing, or fallen prey to phishing scams. So it is very real, and it is something that we need to be mindful of. But then we go back to that initial statement of, it's a little bit daunting, a little bit confusing, and hard to digest. So with that as kind of the premise, how can you help small business owners be more understanding of what things that we need to be doing better?
Yeah. Well, so just to touch on a couple of things you said there, Chad, I mean, firstly, this concept of fear selling is just really rife in the security industry, and it's been around forever. Like, I've been buying off the back of fear for 18 years as an end user chief security officer. You know, this concept of fear, uncertainty, and doubt, mm-hmm. It's not only security. You know, you look at like the insurance industry or any of those industries, they're built up under that kind of fear, uncertainty, and doubt umbrella. And that's where, you know, you will have seen at that conference, that's where 90% of the marketing in the cybersecurity industry comes from, is scaring people that have a lot of unknowns into purchasing something that is perhaps over and above what they might really need. Mm. The other thing is that, you know, all of those organizations, or 90% of those organizations that have built products and services, I think by last count, there's like 4,500 different cybersecurity product companies in the market. They've all been built by venture capitalists, right? Whose focus is to get money back for their stakeholders and sell as much as they physically can. So they've all been really focused on big enterprise customers,
sure.
You know, and that means going for the big monetary values. It means focusing on organizations that have already got a significant spend in security and normally a ton of resources. So, you know, one of the things I always say is I've been incredibly lucky throughout my career because I didn't run small businesses, right? I ran huge global businesses and had tens of millions to spend on resources and tools to protect those organizations. But even then, with that spending power and with those resources, I still struggled to get the outcome, right? I was still getting hacked. We were still getting hit with ransomware. Mm-hmm. And we see stories every day in the press and the media about businesses going out of business because of ransomware, phishing, hacking attacks. So as an industry, like you quite rightly said, we must be doing something wrong. And it comes down to a few fundamental points. So number one is focus on the basics. You know, because everyone's got caught up in this industry that's worth billions and billions of dollars every year, the industry is inventing new and exciting things like sharks with freaking laser beams that you could possibly need to protect your organization.
Sure.
When in reality, all of those things that you've just said, phishing, ransomware, there's 50 to 100, 150 plus different products you could buy, all do exactly the same thing, mm-hmm. You know? So actually, spending time selecting which one from other ones is probably not the best use of your time. You use something, right? You talked about procrastination a little bit there. That's something we get caught in as well. It's like, well, there's 200 different antivirus technologies. Let's spend 3 months choosing which one of them has got the best features. I mean, you know, it's a waste of time, and you need to focus on those real basics. So I say number one, you know, really focus on the basics. Number two, like you said, how the hell do you know what to go for? And there's plenty of standards out there. You know, we keep regurgitating the standards. You can go and speak to anyone who's done a bit of cybersecurity. We all know people in the technology industry that have done some cyber, or we know a virtual CISO or someone who's a chief security officer. They can give you 5 to 10 things really easily that you should be doing. Mm-hmm. I think for too long, we've said we don't know what we should be doing, mm-hmm. because that's the easiest answer, when in reality, we do know. We just need to go and get those basics done and stop worrying about the sharks with freaking laser beams. So I think, you know, there's all that stuff to consider.
We understand the frustrations HOA board members and property managers face when deciding the best solution for their HOA and pool security. Should we use a keypad, hand out keys, or install a key card system? Do we even need cameras? These are some of the questions that are difficult to navigate, and we're here to help. At LockDock Security, we've spent over 20 years working with homeowners associations and property managers to find the system that best fits the pool and HOA needs. Camera systems for the front gate or front entrance, key card systems for the pool gates, or simply updating the gate so that it meets safety and code compliance. We like to take the guesswork out of the process to answer any questions and help find the right solution. Our mission is to help you protect your people and your property, and that includes pools. Contact our team today to schedule your free consultation for your community. It's intriguing to me because, you know, unfortunately, my mind goes a lot to different personalities. And a lot of folks in the security world, cybersecurity specifically, are very they're risk averse folks typically, and they're always a little bit kind of questioning everything that's out there. Like, is this really true? And then it's kind of hard at times for them to commit to something because they have such a high level of knowledge that to pin them down to say you need to do these five particular things or whatever is difficult because they know that there's a thousand things that you should be doing and they don't want to just commit to those few and get held into something that says, hey, I gave you some wrong advice. So I kind of get the complexity of that. When it comes down to it, you know, I guess where the concern that I have at times is people that want to walk around a little bit oblivious or, you know, just take that tone of, well, it's not going to happen, or maybe it's the type of person that has 32 different virus protection pieces of software running on their computer, but yet they're, you know, for instance, the other day I got a message on Facebook Messenger from what appeared to be somebody was connected to, which it was actually from their account, that said, hey, check out this person that recently died, and here's a link. Well, it was a bit odd, right? And so I sent them a text message. I was like, hey, did you send me this? And they said, no. Well, you may want to check your account. I think you got hacked. But typically, somebody just clicks that, and now you're down this pipeline. And all of that protection in the world really just kind of doesn't necessarily help if you're following down those paths. Am I correct on that, or am I off base?
No, you're absolutely right. And I think if you'd asked me for kind of the number one tip on anything, both personal and business, you know, it's multi-factor authentication. You know, putting that dual layer of protection on any account anywhere is just the single most important thing you can do, right? Because then you have to have something in your hand. It has to have that second layer of protection. The reason I say that is because in that case, that wasn't your problem, but whoever the person is that you're connected to that's in your friendship group clearly didn't have multi-factor in place, and therefore they were able to hijack, get into their account, and then send you a message. And that articulation is exactly the same as supply chain in a business-to-business environment, right? It's getting access to the small business's email, who then email the big business to say, click this link or change my payment details or whatever it is. So it's a great articulation of what's wrong, but it's also a great articulation of the fact that the threats are the same and the basics are the same, no matter if you're a business or you're a personal guy at home trying to protect your own stuff. Yeah. You know, those basic things like multi-factor authentication mean that without you, without also having your phone in their hand or without having access to your email as well, they cannot gain access to those accounts.
So I want to break that down a little bit from what I just think I heard you said, and you can correct me, please, if I'm off base. So in that particular scenario, because it's real,
yep,
that individual, if they got their Facebook account hacked, they now have sent a link to me. If I don't have two-factor authentication set up and I click that link, I'm on my work computer and I click that link, it takes me to some website. All of a sudden, boom, it's starting to download stuff in the background. I'm not necessarily aware of it, but it now has some type of tracking it on my computer that could potentially give access to information for my business that was necessarily not where they were headed, but they got access to it unintentionally. If I don't have protections on my end, if I'm not protecting my passwords and protecting my login credentials, then now that person has all of the access down into my business where they were just sending a phishing scam in to get somebody to see, to click a link. Is that kind of what I'm understanding? And now they have access into our business that they could then connect up to other folks.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, that's absolutely true. You could go through the personal link, but also the kind of analogy that I was drawing there was, imagine your friend that sent you that link is actually a small to medium sized business, mm-hmm. and you're the enterprise business mm-hmm. in that scenario, right? Now, if you think about it like that, it's the same, because that friend of yours on a personal to personal Facebook network perspective is in your trusted network, yep. right? Now, they've got a weakness in their account because they haven't got multi-factor authentication. Someone's gained access to it, and you were very savvy about it, but effectively they're in the trusted circle, right? Mm-hmm. So you're going to trust stuff because it appears to genuinely come from them. That's the same on a B2B basis. So that small business gets hacked because they haven't got adequate controls in place. They're trusted by the enterprise. So the enterprise is seeing an email coming from their legitimate email address saying, change our payment details, mm-hmm. right? Yep. So actually, it's the same analogy for you having a trusted network with your friends as it is with an enterprise organization having a trusted network with their small to medium-sized businesses and their supply chain.
So two-factor authentication is a huge step forward, which I know a lot of people don't use. So that's one thing. Another question that I have is, if I am on cloud services, primarily on cloud services, and this is something that I can attest to in our organization. We have zero physical servers on site. Everything is in the cloud. Absolutely. Am I better off, or am I completely protected because of that? I guess that let me ask it in that way. Am I completely protected because everything's in the cloud?
There's some really positives and some real negatives of both of those things, right? The fantastic thing about where the industry is now from where it was 10 to 15 years ago, and this is kind of the counterpoint to the selling with fear argument, is that actually it's a real differentiator for those big technology companies mm-hmm. to have good security now, mm-hmm. right? And for most small to medium-sized businesses, if you're utilizing one of the big cloud providers like AWS, Azure, Google Cloud Platform, there is a ton of tools in there inherent for free in all of those clouds mm-hmm. that you can use to protect whatever you've got in there, right? There's built-in encryption. There's ways to make it all private. There's, you know, there's just all this stuff because they're now using it. And you'll see Google recently purchased Mandiant, right? Crazy. I can't remember the number, ludicrous, 44 billion or some ridiculousness. And that's because they're differentiating themselves with security, right? So the great thing is 15 years ago, you had to go and buy all these things separately. What I'm not saying to you is you have to go buy anything. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is you need some expertise to do it, right? So you need someone to come in and to do a review of what's there and to be able to set those things and set that stuff up right. The right thing, like you're doing right now, is beginning to ask the questions, right? The controls are there. The technology's there to do it. Mm-hmm. It just needs to be configured well. So don't go out and buy all these sharks with freaking laser beams. Just get someone who knows what they're talking about to make sure that the basics are built in. And most of the time, that's enough, right? You don't want to be the low-hanging fruit is most of the aim of it.
So if I'm hearing what you're saying correctly, if you have Google and AWS and all that's great, but if you're not activating the tools for the protection, you're no better off than having it all sitting in a room somewhere that somebody can easily walk into and take.
Absolutely. And you know, what it comes down to, you quite rightly identified the business aspects of security. And actually, for most of our customers and most small to medium-sized businesses, it doesn't really come down to, do I want to do security or do not? It's, I'm trying to build my own business. Like I don't have the time, I don't have the energy or the resources to really put a load of effort into doing this because I'm running at a million miles an hour trying to sell my own products and services and solutions. So actually it becomes one of a business conversation about how can I do this quickly and effectively.
Well, I agree with that. But on top of that, I think it's a major challenge from a day-to-day operation standpoint. One, if you have the interruptions, and that's probably the base level of the fear selling, right? The interruptions. But because we live in such a connected world and people are transferring information back and forth all the time, a vulnerability in one business, I mean, that we're, that you're connected to, you know, we're connected to customers and vendors alike, right? A vulnerability on one of those sides can trickle through all of it very quickly. And so being very, very mindful or conscientious of the folks that you're also doing business with and understanding what their security protocols are is huge. But again, you know, it's not like on a day-to-day basis. And I think what I'm hearing you say is on a day-to-day basis, we're focused on selling our products and services and solving our customers' problems. We're not necessarily entering into the conversation before we get to that point and say, hey, what kind of security protocols do you have in place for your data? that's not an introductory conversation. It's almost an after an incident conversation, unfortunately.
Yeah, 100%. And a couple of things. So firstly, we're seeing, because of what you just said, we're seeing a real positive trend in the industry, which is people aren't necessarily buying out of fear anymore. They're buying to speed up their sales cycles, right? So imagine a startup wants to sell to an enterprise. Mm-hmm. Again, back to the AWS or cloud conversation, They see it as a differentiator for them. So say you've got two small businesses that have both made a CRM, for example. You know, the enterprise now, because of what you highlighted, is going to be infinitely more likely to select the one that is inherently more secure because they see less risk, they see less danger to their supply chain from that organization. So what we're seeing is a lot of customers coming to us and saying, look, I'm not so scared anymore. Like I can do the basics relatively well, but you know, I need to be able to demonstrate that. I need to build up trust with these enterprise organizations and demonstrate that we're doing it effectively and that we're doing it well, which is a really important kind of cornerstone and a bit of a shift that we've seen in the market. The other thing that you mentioned, you know, about time, we liken ourselves to, you know, a Trinet for HR or a QuickBooks for finance. You know, when you're a small to medium-sized business, you don't think about going hire a chief human resources officer as your second hire. Like you just don't do it. Like we haven't done it yet because we've got Trinet and we utilize a third party to help us to run as a service HR and help us to make it easy. That's the model essentially we've just replicated for cyber is, look, I don't have the time, I don't have the resources, I don't have the patience to focus on that. So therefore I want someone to do it who's got the expertise to do it for me and we can take that pain away.
So you're able to come in and say, okay, let's see how your business processes are currently, how you're logging into things, how you're basically the software that you're using and start to identify pretty quickly some of the potential vulnerabilities and then advise on these are some things that you need to implement to make those protections.
Yeah. So we have a freemium solution where we'll do for free what the industry has made you pay for years and years, which is like our earlier conversation, pointing out what's wrong. You know, the analogy of a doctor saying, you know, you're really, really ill, now leave, you know, without helping you at all. Or, you know, you're the mechanic saying your car's not going to make it to the next corner of this road. I'll see you later. Right. And deal with it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what we've done as an industry forever. So what we've done is we've made that stuff free. Like you can find out how bad you are for free, which is fantastic. What we'll do is we'll actually fix the problem and solve the problem for you as part of a subscription. And that we're really focused on getting those outcomes and genuinely committed to, you know, not having these continual ransomware attacks, not having these continual hits on small to medium sized businesses, simply because as an industry, like we're withholding this knowledge somehow that they should have, that they should be able to protect themselves with.
Yeah. Well, and I like the fact too, because, you know, a lot of folks, you get really intense about this after something happens and then it's in a cleanup mode. And what you're effectively presenting is, well, let's just go ahead and check it out now. You've got the freemium model. Go ahead and see where your vulnerabilities are, see where your issues are. And now you can start to proactively work on them before you're sitting there and you walk into your business one Monday morning and everybody says, well, we can't make phone calls or we can't log into our email and we can't get into our CRM because somebody has attacked us. And now we're just sitting here. Now we're in scramble mode that we've got to figure out who can get this resolved.
Yeah. And that's the other part of the industry. You'll hear if you just Google around about cybersecurity, the buzzword in the last 2 years has been managed detection and response, right? And it does exactly what it says on the tin. You detect it, and then you've got to respond to it. The problem is, particularly for small business again, it's happened, right? Like the data's gone or the business has stopped or whatever it is. And that's fine. You can then react and recover, which is an important component. But imagine if you could be proactive with it. Imagine if you could build the hygiene in beforehand so that it never happened in the first place. And the industry is just not built around that. So we, again, have focused on that kind of proactive hygiene. It's like same thing you said about noise and just being really difficult once you leave it for two. It's like, I don't know, washing the dishes every day when you eat dinner, right? If you leave it for 4 months, it's just going to build up and it just becomes this massive problem that you can't get over and you don't think you'll ever finish. Whereas we walk into a business, once you've got them into a state of clean hygiene from a cyber perspective, you just maintain that continuously over time. And when a new vulnerability does pop up, it's very quick and easy to fix that stuff. It's not lost in a, you know, 6 months worth of noise and outdated patches and vulnerabilities and all that kind of horrible stuff that detracts from the basics, which is just keep everything clean and clean.
Can you copy this key? That's a question we get asked about 3,422 times a year. And how can you actually be sure that the person who asked that question is supposed to get a copy of that key? Well, we think you should always know who can copy your keys to your business and your home, because it could be your neighbor, an old employee, a contractor, or even worse, your mother-in-law. At LockDock Security, we believe in protected key systems, so you always know who has a copy of your key. To find out more, visit LockDock.net or stop by our Charlotte location. LockDock Security, helping you protect your people and your property. Maybe this is completely off-base question and maybe difficult for you to answer completely, but when there's a lot of services out there, a lot of software as a service that you log into. So here's an example of one, a real one, Evernote. Evernote account. When I log into Evernote, I can go, there's a section of it, and I don't remember what it's called, but it says it'll give me a list of everywhere that my account is logged into, all of the devices that it's connected to. Is that a trustworthy list of information? For instance, if someone has hacked into that account and has access to that information, do they have the ability to mask that or to prevent that from being visible? Or is that a reliable resource of knowing where your account is being accessed from?
I think I have to say overwhelmingly really positive thing. Now, I'm not saying you couldn't mask that, mm-hmm. right? I don't know the ins and outs of how Evernote does its IP tracking and kind of geolocation type stuff. But effectively, I think that's an overwhelmingly positive thing. You know, I mean, for example, again, it's about keeping things simple. Like if you know you're just on your iPad from Evernote and anything even looks slightly suspicious, you know, you can just kill those sessions and be more comfortable. And then, you know, you can keep an eye on it. If one keeps popping up from a particular location not used to, reset your password. I mean, I think overwhelmingly more access to visibility and data that helps you simply make those kind of judgment calls is just really important, you know, particularly when it's your personal data that you're talking about.
Yeah, having the ability to kind of see exactly where your particular account is being accessed from, whatever it is that you're looking at, and say, okay, well, now I know, like, it's just these three devices and they're all mine, or how did I get logged into 22 devices and I don't know where any of them are?
Exactly. And I think just having access to that, I mean, that's been a positive trend. I know you can do that on, you know, most of the messaging apps now as well. So, you know, having the ability to do that is just really important.
So you have basically a website where you can go through and do this freemium test. It's Cyvitar.ai. Is that the website?
Yeah, absolutely. www.cyvitar.ai. Yep.
And you've got a section on that says get started for free and kind of go through that process. And one of the things that I'm walking away from this conversation today is focus on the basics. I think that if anybody that's listening to this or watching this right now, if they would just go back and assess how many of my accounts do I have two-factor authentication on? You know, if you've got a Gmail account, if you've got a, what are the other Office 365 or whatever, Microsoft Teams, whatever it is that you're working with, whatever platform you are for your email, are you using two-factor authentication? Because if that's a huge stopping point, because if someone gets access to your email, they get access to a lot of information.
100%. And all the great thing, again, like the cloud services, all of those SaaS tools, mm-hmm. or the majority of them, have all got it built in now. You know, you don't have to go and buy something extra. You can buy a super duper one if you want, but actually 99% of them, all of those big names, have all got multi-factor you can just turn on with your phone number. It's not a difficult thing to do, you know.
And then if you have that, I guess the other big thing is, and I know this is just kind of scraping the surface, but if you're using that and then you get into using services that allow for single sign-on so that you can utilize those same services and then you're kind of protected multi-level.
Yeah. I would say that was a second step for MFA, but then, you know, even more simple than that, we all know about kind of old antivirus type tech. I mean, the main thing for everyone is going to be that endpoint, that laptop, whatever it is that you're sat on doing the work on, you know, that's going to be the key thing as a kind of second measure. And there's a ton of really good kind of advanced tools out there that you can stick on those endpoints, again, relatively cheaply. You know, even the Microsoft ones are getting much, much better now. So just, I mean, it's there, turn it on. You've got the personal firewall on there, you've got the Windows Defender and all that stuff, like it's there, use it. So, you know, I think as a business, you'd obviously want to perhaps buy something a little bit more advanced, but actually if it's end user stuff, you know, and it's people on the endpoints and just personal, just utilize the tools that are out there.
Sure. You know? So final question for you, and I told you this before we started recording, this is going to be a little bit of a selfish question, but we recently shifted over in our business over to a customer portal for our customers. Rather than sending them an attachment as a PDF for a proposal or a quote, we now send them a link that drives them to a online web portal where they can access all that information. So, you know, we were trying to make some advancements in not having to send attachments, but also we have learned, obviously, through this process that, you know, a lot of companies don't allow employees to click on links. So yep. We've, you know, in an effort for that, we have listed the URL below so that they could go to that directly. What are some other things that we need to be mindful of? So we're effectively, we're generating an email to a customer saying, hey, you have a new estimate ready. And here's how you can go view it. But what are some other things that we can be intentional about providing a level of comfort and security for our customers if they have concerns about going somewhere or clicking a link?
Yeah, so I think technically, I come back to multi-factor, right? You could have multi-factor on the front end of that particular portal would make a huge difference. That would give the customer comfort. From a link versus PDF perspective, I think my answer would be slightly different, which is actually, the most important thing about however you do that stuff is to be consistent and is to communicate it, right? Because, you know, whether it's a link or whether it's a PDF or whatever it is, it's got to remain consistent and they've got to be expecting it, you know? So it makes it incredibly easy for an end user, whether that's a finance person or HR person, whoever it is that's receiving that email, to get used to expected behavior. So if they're always having to go in and log into your portal, when it comes along as a PDF, they're going to go, wait a minute, this isn't normal. And they'll likely reach out to you, right? If it's constantly jumping between PDFs and links, and then it's just an email, and then it's, you know, sent by Pigeon or something, then all of those different things are not going to build up the expected behaviors, you know? So I think what you've got to do is be consistent. You know, there's all the stuff about it being a genuine website and that kind of stuff. But you build that behavior and then you communicate that behavior. You know, you get emails from the banks all the time, or you see the adverts from the banks that say, you will never get a link from us.
True.
That doesn't mean links are bad. What they're trying to do is build up expected behavior.
Gotcha.
You know, they're trying to educate that customer base or that user base to say, if you see a link, it's not us, right? And that would be my advice to anyone, would be, look, if you're going to send a PDF and that's how you deliver invoices, password protect it and then have it as an expected behavior. If you're going through a portal, always go through a portal. That would be kind of my very basic advice.
I like that. That makes a lot of sense. It's the same thing here in the U.S. A lot of times there's a lot of messaging going around about the IRS will never call you. They're going to send you a letter addressed to you, to the address they have on file. They're not going to call you and tell you that you owe taxes. It's the expected behavior and understanding how to follow that. So Very good advice. Well, man, I really appreciate your time, Greg, and all the information here. I think it's very valuable. If they want to find out more about your offerings and be able to connect with you, cyvertar.ai, and kind of go through that process, and lots of valuable information, valuable advice, and a great resource. Hey, Craig, thanks again for your time today. Man, super great information. Focus on the basics, multi-factor authentication, and create expected behavior. Three big takeaways that I've got for today. Thank you for joining us. If you haven't already, make sure you subscribe. New episodes every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. Don't miss a single one. We'll see you then.